Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota tribes are maintaining sovereignty regarding their COVID-19 checkpoints. Meanwhile, more and more South Dakota businesses are reopening. Is it too soon? And could the rate of these reopenings in the current business climate have an impact on local elections? It's good to have the Dakota Political Junkies back for more discussion. John Schaff is professor of political science at Northern State University in Aberdeen. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me again.
And John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. He's back for more as well. John Hunter,
right.
Welcome back.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for the invitation.
I want to start with you, John Hunter, because you wrote a column recently about, and we're going to get into this whole idea of, you know, how the federal government is thinking about economic stabilization and stimulus, how state government is thinking about that, what needs to happen next with unemployment and such. And you say, let's look to history a little bit for some ideas about what might be needed next. Give us start us off with what are you thinking about when you think about how to handle this massive unemployment that we're looking at and what it could mean for the days ahead?
Well, it kind of struck me that, you know, we're making natural comparisons to other big recessions or even the Great Depression where you had high unemployment and how do you get out of that. And I think we learned some things from the Great Depression that that federal government can play a role, a good role in getting that too. But you remembered, of course, the WPA projects and so forth were popular and helping employ people. Now this is, you know, 90 years ago or so, 80 to 90 years ago when this was all taking place. But the thing that kind of struck me was this kind of a subset of that called the Civilian Conservation Corps that President Roosevelt created in 1933. And the idea was, yes, same thing as employing people, young people in that case, but it was almost entirely on conservation ideas. So anywhere from tree planting to building parks and wildlife refuges and so forth. And so if global warming is an issue today, which we all agree it is. Well, not everyone agrees, I guess, but then let's do that. I understand the value of sending out checks to people and letting them spend it the way they want, but employment, it could be very valuable for many people, and there are now a lot of young people that are unemployed during this time. You know, out of the 33 million Americans that have been laid off in the last couple of months, great deal of them are, you know, probably nearly 8 million are younger than 30 years old. And so I think we could put together a jobs program, a work program that could hit two different great ideas. One, employing people, giving them something to do, some valuable work, and also helping combat global warming.
And this is there's a lot of energy for this right now, too. You see a lot of high school students and, you know, trying to figure out whether they need to take a gap year. What are they going to do next? College students graduating into a really terrible time to be a new college students. And you also see a lot of energy around climate change and global warming and figuring out what is sustainability and whatnot. Seems like a pretty good match to put those two things together. What kind of impact, when you look back at history, John Hunter, you know, the impact of a program like that, and we're still talking about it 90 years later.
Well, in this case, I think it was an extraordinarily successful program. Generally, WPA was considered a big success. It was actually slightly smaller than I think what people remember it, just kind of anecdotally. There weren't as many people. They eliminated, people who were, you know, farmers because they were doing other important work like feeding America and so on. So it ended up not being as many, but they were there were a lot of people who worked in this. I think a little bit more than 3 million people were in the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, mostly young people. And I think you could argue, I think, that it may have helped set up some of the Greatest Generation kind of stuff that we now think of. They may have been 20 years old in the 30s. They may have gone to war in the 40s, they may have come back and built America in the 50s. And so just from the top of my head, I wasn't there, despite how old you might think I am. But it seemed like it really, I think it may have been game-changing for America, some of these programs during the Great Depression, and maybe we could recreate those now.
John Schaff, what comes to mind first when you think about programs like this and think about what they have to inform what we're doing today and the problems that we're facing today?
Well, I think John's really on to something, which is, you know, there are a couple things. What did the CCC do back in the 1930s? You know, and there were a lot of those programs occurred, that those conservation activities occurred right here in the state of South Dakota. There's evidence of CCC programs all over our state. And what it does, you know, the purpose of an economy is not simply to put people to work, but to do something productive. And I think what John's talking about is there are productive things we can do with labor. Instead of simply taking money and giving it to people, can we give people the opportunity to do something productive? That means it will sustain economic value over time, because now we have things like dams and roads and these sorts of things, bridges, you know, any, you know, all sorts of things you could do that it might have economic value that they were doing back in the 30s with CCC and the WPA. But also, I think you were onto something, Lori. You know, there's a cottage industry now with people writing fake graduation speeches because we don't have any graduation exercises. And one of them was David Brooks wrote a nice one for The Atlantic a couple weeks ago. And one of the things he said was that maybe what young people should do, because it's going to be a rough couple economic years, is just go do whatever you want and don't worry about whether you make money doing it, make a lot of money doing it. If you want to go somewhere, go there, and if you can get a job that, you know, you can survive on, just do that for a while and have an experience instead of, I need to start my career right now, because, of course, everything, we're kind of in a economist interruptus right now, and so it's a bad time to start your career. So this program, or, you know, something that sort of mirrors what John's talking about, would be an opportunity, at least for some young people, to say, hey, did you always want to go to this place and work outside and do something? Well, here, we're going to allow you to do that, and there's going to be all these other benefits, these public benefits from that, depending on what kind of project they end up working on.
Oh, well, John and Lori, the other thing, too, with that is that this might be, it's possible, you know, every survey I've ever seen about conservation or kind of global warming issues is that it's much more important to young adults than it is to older adults. And so you might have just possibly the most enthusiastic jobs program ever invented, right? I mean, some jobs program forcing you to do things you don't want to do. This might be, you might be filled with young people who want to do this exact thing.
Yeah. And when we send checks to, to individuals, here's your stimulus check, we are incurring debt for that. John Schaff, from a national debt or deficit perspective, it matters what you invest in a lot of ways. There's a big difference between just giving, I mean, clearly people need to pay their rent too. I'm not minimizing that. There's a stabilization aspect to this, and then there's a stimulus aspect to it. But as we look at big programs in the days ahead, what we invest in matters for how it's, in quotations, paid for in the future, right? So that becomes part of the conversation too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. The checks that I've gotten mine. I don't know if you guys have gotten yours, but I've gotten mine. I call it my Trump dollars. I got mine, and so that CARES Act money that many of us have gotten, everybody will get it eventually as the summer goes along. What really was designed simply because to allow people to pay bills and kind of maintain a status quo in their lives, but I don't know how much of that was designed to actually stimulate the economy. And that's what I mean, is that you don't really create economic activity from taking money from, you know, one group and giving it to another group, or borrowing money and just spending it. It's got to be on something productive, you know. So the proverbial example, if we could hire people to dig holes and fill them in, and that would stimulate the economy – that's not true, because digging holes and filling them in is not productive labor. That's just a waste of money. And so we are at this point, we have to borrow large amounts of money from our future in order to take care of things now. And, you know, even before the COVID crisis, we had debt problems, and now it's only going to be exacerbated. So we at least have to be thinking a little about, as we spend money, we want to make sure we're spending money on things that are actually productive. If we've stabilized a little bit, and to a certain extent, we're going to have to keep doing that. There's going to be an element of our population that simply is going to need money from the public in order to survive. But then as we think of getting our economy going, you can't just spend on anything. It's got to be something that there's actually, you know, economic productivity behind it. Like saying that and infrastructure is a great example of productive use of public dollars, because you build a road, people use the road, it's infrastructure. It allows for more economic activity and more productive activity. And these are the kinds of things that I think, as we start maybe thinking of at least a medium and longer term as opposed to the short term, these are the kinds of things that we have to be thinking about.
Yeah. Now, John Schaff, my younger brother, owns an irrigation business, and a large part of his day is filling holes. Digging holes and then filling them in. So
reason.
I could. It is for a reason.
Really digging holes and filling them in.
He is not. There are many things that happen in the interim. However, yes. I can imagine him in his truck with his crew right now, listening to the radio on the way to his next job, saying, "Well, Professor, I'm quite good at it."
I remember when we had the crisis of 2008, 2009-ish. I think I'm not going to name names. I can't remember who exactly it was, but claimed that the United States government could pay for and build like 10,000 tanks, and then dump them into the ocean, and that would be okay because we kept defense contractors employed, right? That stimulated the economy. But that's what I'm talking about, is we don't just do nothing and expect that it's going to stimulate the economy. So your brother is engaged in very productive hole digging.
And may his
production increase.
Thank you. Let's talk about elections and going back as we talk about my younger brother, who's, you know, in business right now and, you know, trying to figure out how to stay afloat as a small business owner. Lots of people are having that question, and COVID numbers we're monitoring them pretty closely every day. Businesses are trying to figure out how to open. We've got an election coming up. There's a lot happening right now. John, let's talk. John Schaff, let's start with you and talk elections. And as we come closer to a June 2nd primary, to city council elections across the state,
mm-hmm.
Lots to think about. Where do you want to begin?
Well, I just think that I've been noticing, you know, here in Aberdeen, there was, as of course, I think probably almost everybody who listens to this knows that the state's actual dictates, you might say, on shelter in place and closing things down were pretty minimal. But as a municipality, the city of Aberdeen passed a relatively stringent ordinance shutting down things like restaurants, you know, the barbershops, hair salons, that sort of thing. And then it was, I got to think of my dates here, about 3 weeks ago, we started to ease up on that. But you could see these debates, a lot of the debates that we're having nationally, we're occurring locally, of this balance between we want to ensure public safety versus, you know, I've got to make a living, this sort of thing, or no, people need to get outside, this sort of, you know, should we, for example, our public parks were closed. And I think I said this on a previous show, that they had literally taken police tape and wrapped up the slide in the jungle gym so you couldn't climb on them. And so we started to, but you could see on our city council debates, and this has leaked into some of our, we have, like most places, we have some road, you know, it's staggered, the city council districts, or city council elections. So we've got a couple, of our city council districts that are up for reelection. You can see that there is these fights or these disagreements are spilling over a little bit into city council races. As you've got people who are like incumbents who are more on the side of we need to be more on the side of public safety. I have picked up challengers that are, I'm on more on the side of opening up business because we can't have all of our small businesses fail. And so it's just interesting to see this national debate that we're having is being echoed in very local politics. And even though within our community, we can see people disagreeing about what exactly is the proper balance between economics and public health, and at what point does bad economics itself become a public health problem when you've got so many people out of work and economic stagnation. I think of something like some of you saw the news story of last week that Mayo Clinic is projecting losing $900 million this year. Well, mm-hmm. How many hundreds of millions of dollars does Mayo Clinic lose before it has a public health consequence? These are the sort of things that I think we have to talk about. And it's happening even in very local elections, and I see it right here in Aberdeen.
John Hunter, is there also an opportunity for people to really talk about leadership, whether it's you're an incumbent and you feel like you had really strong leadership and, you know, you did certain things versus, you know, a challenger who might, you know, look for chinks in the armor and say, you know, that so some of it just being philosophy of and policy, what kind of ordinances did we pass, but the consequences of even, you know, messaging and communication and that kind of behavior. A lot of this has happened and it continues to happen right in the midst of, you know, we haven't reached our peak yet. What do you think, John Hunter?
Well, I think you're spot on, Lori, and that I think it does change the dialogue a little bit toward leadership. You know, I think the idea of anticipatory stuff rather than reactionary, and so this, you know, there were some who could see this tsunami coming, and others who didn't. And it's all of a sudden, it's a, do we wait until there are cases in our city before we do anything, or is there something we can do to anticipate it? But then, yes, I think you switched a little bit to, you know, we got to figure out how we're going to balance long and short-term things. There's certainly governments at all levels, way down to the fire district or to the township, where you say, look, we got to get through this year successfully, but also we have to make plans for beyond this year. And so I think it's a great opportunity for some people to make a difference in their communities if they're serious about it. And I think the challenge is, you know, none of these public service elected positions are particularly lucrative. It's in a lot of cases it's kind of part volunteer, right? So mm-hmm. even at the state legislature level, it's, you know, a couple of months of full time and then part time the rest of the year. But if you're serious about it, if you like your state, if you like your local district, whatever that is, I think they're great opportunities to both make kind of get through the short term and make great plans for the long term.
What have we learned? This is a big question, but what have we learned if you are considering running for office? The challenges that you might face for some of those low-paying jobs, and you know, as we think of some of the more high-profile leaders of a Governor Kristi Noem or Mayor Paul Tangenhagen from Sioux Falls, who's on the national news, I think everybody who's thinking about running might be more inspired to run, but also has to have an awareness that once you take office, almost anything can happen in your term, and you better be ready for it. John Schaff, do you think that candidates are learning the seriousness or the weight of asking for those positions, asking voters to trust them with that kind of responsibility?
I think so, and sort of going on what John Hunter was saying is, you know, I think most people, when they get into, especially, you know, very local politics, you can't say it's thankless work, but it's certainly it's not financially lucrative work, and so you're doing it really as an amateur, someone who does it for the love of it. And then suddenly what we found, you know, a couple months ago or, you know, 3 months ago, is suddenly we're asking people who are kind of part-time people who are not paid very much and they sort of do it because they like it to make really earth-shattering decisions, and suddenly you've got major responsibilities that people's lives and livelihood might be heavily affected by decisions that your county commission or your city council makes. And it certainly makes something that is normally, you know, kind of a part-time job, suddenly it takes on all sorts of consequences that we never really thought that these sort of jobs would have. And I think what, you know, a lesson to those of us who are voters is that as you assess candidates, surely we look at what our policy preferences are and how they match up with the candidates who are running. But it's also why we need to assess character, because almost inevitably, at some point in somebody's term, something is going to come up which we never could have anticipated. And knowing someone's position on a policy from the election isn't going to help you, because something comes along that nobody would have thought of. And so then it's about how does a particular character deal with something that's unexpected, and who do you trust in a time of crisis or when a really hard decision has to be made? It's not just about policy preferences, although those are important. It's also assessing somebody's character.
And stamina in some ways as well.
Well,
we need to know.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that.
Yeah.
Well, and thickness of skin, too. I mean, if you have, yeah, you know, whatever decisions you make, there, you know, we have a broad diversity of opinions in our communities, and so there will be people who oppose your decision. And I think you have to learn this it's not a job for people who need gratification from 100% of their constituents. I think you need to be able to gain satisfaction from making good decisions, even if they're sometimes opposed by some. So I think there can be a lot of job satisfaction. As John Chaff was describing, I think you probably end up looking to your character as much as anything. I said, I realize this may not be popular with even my friends, but I think it's an absolutely right thing to do for our community, and you have to gain enough satisfaction from that to overcome the phone call you get from your friend.
if you're running for office right now because you want adulation from the public, you picked the wrong time to run for office. Because no matter what, I mean, this is always true, but it's doubly true now when we're faced with bad choice versus bad choice. And no matter what we do public policy-wise, there are going to be dire consequences. There are going to be bad consequences for somebody. It might be economic bad consequences. It might be health bad consequences, whatever it is. And so this is why, you know, we cry out probably more than ever of what we need is leadership, as opposed to, you know, people who might just be interested in public adulation or posing or, you know, simply advancing a career. Is that because no matter who's in office, and this is, you know, from local now all the way up to national, the ability to make a decision and to convince people when you make that you're being serious and that you're not being frivolous in your decision making, this is, I think, probably needed more than ever.
John Schaff and John Hunter, thank you so much for your time today, and what a great place to end it, which is with thoughts on leadership and why this matters, why local politics matters more than ever. John Schaff, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
John Hunter, thank you as well. We'll see you next time.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks, Laurie.